Good morning, and welcome to the Message of Truth. My name is Keith Greer. I'm the local minister to Harrisburg Church of Christ, and I want to thank you for taking the time to tune in to our program this morning. We hope you will do so every Sunday morning at this time. We also invite you to check out our website at www.churchofchristatharrisburg.com. You'll find many resources on that website, including all these radio programs that we do every week, and you're free to download those and listen to them at your own leisure. You'll find much information there about the church and also information that will help you in your study of the Bible. We encourage you to use it and use it often. We are looking at the book of Revelation, and we are down to Revelation chapter 9. Last week in our discussion of Revelation chapter 8, we noticed that in this text in Revelation chapter 8, God is announcing a judgment that is going to come. We get into chapter number 9, we see that the final three trumpets are going to be worse than the first four. For they affect simply not just man's environment, as the first trumpets did, but this is going to directly affect wicked people. It's probably some of the most frightening of the scenes that are in the entire book in chapter number 9. In chapter number 9, I want to, first of all, give you a list of the things that we're going to be examining here. We see that the fifth trumpet is the fifth woe, and the fifth angel is going to be sounded. And in the vision, we're going to see a star from heaven, which is personified. We're going to see a key that is given to the star, a key that opens the bottomless pit. The smoke escapes from the pit when opened. The smoke darkens the sun and the air. The tormenting locusts that appear out of the smoke, and that have power only over those who are not among the 144,000, that have been sealed. The locust power is limited to a period of 5 months, and the locusts are described similar to other things, as horses prepared to battle, as crowns worn, with faces like the faces of men, hair like the hair of a woman, teeth like the teeth of a lion, and breastplates like the breastplates of iron, and sounds and wings like the sounds of many chariots and many horses rush to battle, and tails like scorpions, which have tormenting power. And then their king is the angel of the abyss, and his name is Abaddon in Hebrew, or Apollyon in Greek, and both mean destruction and destroyer. These are hideous scenes. But ladies and gentlemen, remember, this is symbolic language. This is apocryphal language. It's not literal. It is denoting the terribleness and the destruction that is coming, and how devastating that it is going to be. The sounding of the fifth trumpet, as we said, is some of the most terrifying scenes. And we see that the vision is going to be given to us in chapter number 9. A star from heaven is a star that is personified. Some believe that this is Satan. And whatever the case may be, the star is not doing this on his own. He has fallen, which is a perfect tense. It means that God has allowed it. 2 Corinthians 4 verse 4 would fit very well into this section, that he is the God of this world, and he has power, and he has authority over some things, but his power is limited. The key to the bottomless pit is literally the shaft to the abyss, given to the star that has fallen. It would seem that God, in his overall judgment, has given the star an opportunity to open the abyss, and the angel of the abyss. But the abyss is not in heaven, it is on the earth, and it is full of torment. It's an abode of demons. It has torment. It's kind of referred to in the Bible, as we read in Luke chapter 16:23, as a place of torment, and it's referred to Hades in places like Romans 10:7, and 2 Peter 2 verse 4 and Jude verse 6, where the fallen angels are reserved into judgment. It is an abode of all the ungodly before final judgment. Remember, this is not final judgment that we're reading about in chapter 9. This is a judgment that's directed to a certain segment of people. And it's directed to those who are not sealed or not protected, as we have read earlier. The pit opens and the smoke is blinding. It comes forth in the smoke of deception and delusion, and of moral darkness and degradation, constantly pouring out of the abyss. And again, this is the work of Satan. He seeks to blind. He seeks to deceive. He seeks to set in obstacles that hide his real purpose. And we notice that even though he has great power, it is limited. The locusts, are they literal? Of course not. But they represent moral decadence. Power is given to them, but they cannot torment the 144,000 that had been sealed with God's protection. No killing allowed, but men will seek death. It is so terrible that they will desire death. In verse number 5 of chapter 9, and they are not given authority to kill them, but to torment them for 5 months. Their torment was like the torment of a scorpion when it strikes a man. In those days, men will seek death, and they will not find it. They will desire to die, and death will flee from them. We see that God is tormenting them. They're not going to be killed. They're going to be tormented. And again, this cannot be final judgment. In final judgment, men are going to face the consequence of their decision. Here, the torment is going to be for a limited time of 5 months. The torment and pain in eternal punishment is going to last forever. This is for a limited time. And those who are being tormented by such torment will desire death, but they will not find it. They will not find death, and they will flee to try to run from it, but they cannot run. And so their strength is great, but the ungodly could not withstand them. They're going to have to stand, and they're going to have to give an account for their actions. The leader is terror and destruction, and the final result in this symbolic language is moral decadence. God has now used two instruments to cut down the oppressors of his people. Natural calamity that we read in chapter 8, and chapter 9, eternal decadence. Rome fell from the lies of Satan, and so eternal decay was the result. And one of the reasons for her fall, she was destroyed from within. Her moral collapse caused her own collapse. And so we're seeing that the sixth trumpet and the sixth woe is going to be poured out in chapter number 9, beginning in verse number 13. But I want you to notice that we must remind ourselves that this is neither an actual creature as the locusts that are being described, as some dispensationalist interpreters have suggested. A first century prediction of fighting with helicopter gunships. This is nonsense. This is controlled fantasy. This is making up things on the fly. It provides a highly imaginative description of what God is going to do when he brings divine judgment against the nation of Rome. The latter part of the verse seems to make clear that whatever affliction is being signified here is done through evil men as its agents. For an extended period of time, it is quite clear for 5 months. Humanity will suffer a fate worse than death at the hands of these men. The first host has a name, and his name is Destruction and Destroyer. Whoever this person is, he's a wrecker of everything that is fine, is homely. John was using cryptic language here to identify the present leader of the forces that were about to be destroyed and destructed on earth. None other than the Emperor of Rome himself. You see, Rome was pinning itself against God. It was pinning itself against the God of this world. And she was persecuting his children. God is going to give an account of himself. And he's going to answer for the destruction that they have done to his people. And then we see, beginning in verse number 13, then the sixth angel sounded, and I heard a voice from the four horns of the golden altar, which is before God, saying to the sixth angel who had the trumpet, release the four angels who are bound at the great river Euphrates. So the four angels who had been prepared for this hour and day and month and year were released to kill a third of mankind. Now notice, to kill a third of mankind, the voice of the four horns of the golden altar. That's the altar of golden incense that we read in chapter 6 and verse 10, and also that we referred to last week in chapter 8, verse 3 through 5, which is before God. The power is the request of the saints. In verse number 14, the sixth angel and the sixth trumpets are to release the four angels who are bound at the great river Euphrates, where the river stands for the military might of the enemy. This was the homeland of the Parthians, who at this time the world's most dreaded cavalry. They fought Rome in 53 BC and in AD 62, and they won. These angels are bound, whereas the angels in 7:1 are themselves restrained, the four winds of the earth. The fact that these are bound might mean that they are evil angels who cannot act until God permits them to act. The angels of 7:1 would not be allowed to move against 144,000 who seal. The angels prepare for the time and are released in verse 15. This was predetermined by God's own counsel, by His own hour. 200 million, a tremendous host. God has a great army at His disposal. Literal? No, figurative. It is not a literal army. It just shows a great army. If lined up in normal cavalry formation, they would be 1 mile wide and 85 miles long. It is not literal. It is symbolic. The number is definite and not just a multitude. This would scare any enemy of God's people and assure people, the people of God, that they would be victorious. It is a army and it is a force that cannot be defeated. He says he saw in the vision of the horses in verse 17. The riders are described having breastplates, multicolored, the symbol resembling fire, smoke, and brimstone or sulfur. And the horses are described with heads of lions and tails like serpents and are destructive. And fire and brimstone kill a third of mankind. This is not the end. The horses and the horsemen were seen to be demonic, yet you're used by God for the downfall of Rome. The second woe, the sixth trumpet, provides a vision of external enemies of Rome coming from afar to bring her down and for her to face the consequences of her action. But I want you to notice the last two verses in verse 20 and 21. But the rest of mankind who were not killed by these plagues did not repent of the works of their hand, and they should worship demons and idols of gold, silver, and brass, and stone, and wood, which can neither see nor hear nor talk. And they did not repent of their murders and their sorcerers, or their sexual immoralities, or their thefts. The first war of eternal decay had so blinded them to the first four trumpets of natural calamity that they would not repent. They were not willing to repent. The second woe of external enemies should have frightened them into repenting, but their hearts are so hardened that they refuse to repent. God has done all of this preliminary judgment against Rome to wake her up and get her to see what she is doing and the consequences of her actions. And all of it has failed. The natural calamity, the eternal decay has not brought them penitent to repent before the God of heaven. Therefore, they are beyond the point of no return. They are unable to repent because their hearts are hardened by sin and by the evil and the immorality and the idolatry that they have engaged in. And so now the judgment is set forth. Rome is coming down. She is going to be defeated. She is going to answer for her actions. And God of heaven is well able to deliver that consequence. And so in chapter 9, we see that the end of Rome is coming and is assured. Tune in again next week as we continue our study.